a movie about Elijah, I would start with a scene with a man clothed in tatters, obviously undernourished, hair disheveled, desperately in need of a shower, cowering in the corner of a darkened cave, with just a little hint of light coming through the opening, just enough so we could see him in his sad state. Somehow I would try to communicate the man as he was thinking to himself, woe is me. I think if I was a really good movie maker, I wouldn't have to even put any words there, that the scene itself would communicate what Elijah was feeling. And then I would have a voice break the silence. Elijah, what are you doing here? And then there would be a flashback. A flashback to previous times in Elijah's life and ministry. A time back to when he was fed by ravens after confronting Ahab and being told by God to flee from Israel for his own safety. You would see how the ravens were feeding him, but when the brook dried up, God sent him to a widow in a place called Zarephath. A widow who was reluctant to feed him because she only had enough grain and oil to keep her and her son alive during the drought. Elijah promised them that their rations would not run out, that they would never have to worry about having enough grain or oil, and they didn't, even though they were feeding three folks now, not two. And then the widow's son dies. She is so distraught at the loss of her last family member. But Elijah prays for the son's life to be restored, and it is. And then, if all of those stories weren't enough, I would conclude with a flashback to a more recent story with Elijah's challenge with the prophets of Baal. You can look up the details of the story in 1 Kings if you'd like. But how Elijah had defeated them by showing that Yahweh was superior to the prophets of Baal. While the prophets of Baal couldn't get their God to rain down fire upon their altar, Elijah upped the ante by putting an ox on his altar, dousing it with water, dousing the altar with water, filling a trench around the altar with water, making it so wet, kind of like we felt this spring in Western New York, right? So wet that there's no way it ever could have been burst into flames, and yet he prayed to God, and God sent down a fire and consumed everything that was there. Even after he ran away at Jezebel's threat, we could see a scene of the angel coming and giving him bread and water to survive his journey. And then I think I would have those words repeat, Elijah, what are you doing here? And if I was really good at making movies, and if I'm any good at telling this story this morning, you may be asking yourself the same question of Elijah. What was he doing there? After all of those things that I just shared, what was he doing cowering in the corner of a cave? It's a good question to ask. What happened to Elijah? What caused him to lose his prophetic courage? What caused a man who could stand up to more than 850 prophets to be sent scurrying for his life at the threat of one woman, albeit a powerful woman? But what would cause him to lose his nerve? I think there could be a temptation today to use this text to beat ourselves up, to look for the ways we are like Elijah, how in spite of all that God has done for us, sometimes we still cower, sometimes we're still afraid, sometimes we still doubt, sometimes we think irrational thoughts about how bad our life is, sometimes we may even doubt whether God is even concerned with us at all. But it's hard to guess someone's motivations. It's hard really to know what was going on in Elijah's minds, and if you ever want to study this text and read the different commentaries, there's a whole lot of guessing going on about what caused Elijah to end up where he was. But sometimes I think it's better just to observe what we can observe. That there was a man who was a prophet, through whom God had done great things, and who somehow, in some way, had come to the place like he felt he couldn't go on. I think there's something maybe in that for us this morning as well. Some of you may have found yourself saying, "What happened to me?" Thinking back to a time in your life where maybe you were so full of energy and enthusiasm and commitment for the Lord, you thought nothing would ever stand in your way, and yet somehow life zapped some of that energy. You think about all the aspirations you've had for how you're going to serve God, for how you're going to live your life, for how you're going to raise your family, for the things you're going to accomplish. And somehow something came along, somehow your Jezebel showed up. Maybe has you asking the question, what am I doing here? I don't think Elijah, or most of us for that matter, forget that God is with us. Forget the blessings that God has bestowed upon us or accomplished through us. But I think there's a difference between knowing up here and knowing down here, where you can feel it, where you can live it, where you can rest in it. And sometimes with what life throws at you, it's not always so easy to know, to experience God being close. And then it's easy sometimes to do what we might want to do with Elijah and try to figure out what happened. And we can get so consumed with mourning and bemoaning what might have been, with thinking, where did I go wrong? What could I have done differently? We spend so much time trying to figure out what happened to our aspirations, what happened to our joy, what happened to our enthusiasm, our vigor, our commitment, our discipline, that we just get stuck there. When sometimes I think what can be really healthy is, instead of trying to figure out what went wrong, is just to name our current reality. It's kind of what Elijah did when God asked him what you were doing here. Now, his reality wasn't real. It was a perception, a distorted perception of what reality was. But he just said, this is where I'm at. This is how I feel. I've given you everything, and I'm ready to die. Sometimes I think we need to hear those words. What are you doing here? Because I think built into those words, what are you doing here, might just be the implied question, what's next? So where do you go from here? So this is your reality, Elijah. This is where you are. What's next? I played with this question a little bit this week. I don't know, maybe you've done this before yourself. You put the emphasis on a different place in the sentence. You can do that with every word here, and sometimes it takes on different meanings. What are you doing here? 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 And what are you doing here? Now, maybe in my mind, and if any of us have ever run up against somebody that was really angry, maybe just the whole thing was shouted, what are you doing here? The question is, the truth is, we really don't know how it was asked. But it was asked. We don't know what tone it was set in. We don't know where God placed the emphasis. That's why commentators and biblical scholars and preachers get to spend a lot of time trying to put their take on it. But I also wondered, what was the intent, regardless of how it was said? I think sometimes we can easily hear it, because this is, I think, how sometimes we think God responds to us, is we hear it as a scold. You know, like when you walk into your child's room, and instead of cleaning it, they're playing video games, or you walk into the living room, right? And your four-year-old is coloring on the TV with crayons, right? What are you doing here? We might say. It might be a scold. It might be a way of God trying to chastise Elijah. But it doesn't have to be that way. Maybe it was truly inquiring. Maybe it was a case of God exercising divine ignorance. Now, I know you can say God knows everything and God is all powerful. But if God is all powerful, God can also choose to not know something. God could choose to not know what was going on in Elijah's head. And it might have been a true question. Elijah, talk to me. Share with me. Where are you? What's going on with you? Or maybe it was just one of those kind of rhetorical probing questions. Sometimes when we're in a discussion, you can ask a question to somebody, and instead of challenging their position, instead of arguing with them, you could say, well, what about this? Maybe God was just trying to get Elijah to think, just trying to break Elijah out of his pattern of thinking, out of his pattern of behavior, trying to get Elijah to think, yeah, what am I doing here? And again, we really don't know how God intended it, but I tend to think sometimes God works that way with us. Because I find it interesting, God didn't argue with Elijah even when he was wrong. You can read the rest of the story. He wasn't the last faithful Israelite. He wasn't the last one to be faithful, to not worship Baal, and yet that's how it felt to him. God didn't argue and say, oh, come on, you're not being realistic. You know that's not true. You know I've done so much for you. God doesn't get defensive. Sometimes we want God to because we'd like to have a little argument, wouldn't we? We'd like to say, yeah, but God, what about this? But God, what about this? God didn't argue with Elijah. He didn't try to convince him that he was not seeing things clearly. He didn't try to convince him that he needed to get over himself and remember all the good things God had done for him, all the miracles God had worked through him. God just did one thing. He came to Elijah. And this is where the story gets interesting, because Elijah, being on the mountain of God, where Israel had experienced God with flames and flashes and fire, to the point where they told Moses, you go talk with God, we'll just stay down here. Elijah goes to that same place, and yet it's not in the fire, it's not in the wind, it's not in the earthquakes, it's not in the displays of power that God comes to Elijah. I think our translation we read this morning called it a whisper. Really, one of the most accurate translations I've come across was in the Contemporary English Version, where it said that God came in the thinness, in the quiet. After the fire, there was a sound, the text says, thin, quiet. The Celtic Christians talk about what they call thin places, places where what we can see, the world of what we can see and the world of what we can't see come incredibly close together, where the veil seems to be so thin as if you could reach through one existence and touch the other. Some of you have probably had those moments. We can't control when they come, and we often don't expect them, but sometimes they come. There's a danger in this passage, and I've heard it preached this way before, to say, well, if you want God to speak to you, you need to go into the silence. And God does sometimes use silence. But we don't control when God comes close. We don't control when the thinness happens. Sometimes it doesn't even happen in silence. Sometimes we just know God is incredibly close in those thin places in our everyday existence. Well, God came to Elijah, made himself known in the thin, in the quiet, and then that question comes again, what are you doing here? Now, if I had written this story, Elijah would have said, you know, Lord, that's a good question. Thanks for snapping me out of my doldrums. Thanks for lifting me up and rejuvenating me and helping me see how much you've done for me, helping me see how absolutely ridiculous I've been for cowering in a cave just because one woman made a threat against me. I'm better than that. I don't need to cower from her. But we also know that's not what happened. Elijah's answer was exactly, word for word, the answer that came before God made himself known. God's presence wasn't enough to alter Elijah's perspective, wasn't enough to lift him up. He still felt like dying. He still felt like it was the end of the world. He still felt like he could no longer courageously stand up and defend the Lord. But somehow, in that moment, he did what he hadn't been able to do before, and that was to go back. Go back, God said. And Elijah went. And in the end, instead of Elijah's misperceptions about reality, in spite of him being at the end of his rope, Elijah still was used to anoint kings and to pass the mantle on to a new prophet, a man named Elisha. Maybe some of us are cowering in that cave this morning. And maybe we are praying and looking for God to come to us with power and noise and signs and wonders. But maybe if that's what we're waiting for, we've missed God already coming to us. Sometimes when we're expecting to hear one thing, we can train our ears to hear something. We can train our ears to hear certain messages. We can train ourselves to experience God in certain ways. I heard a story once about a Midwesterner from a farm who was visiting his college roommate in New York City. And walking near Times Square one day, the farm boy suddenly remarked, "I hear a cricket." Well, city people think country folk are crazy to begin with, right? This just confirmed it. "You're crazy," his friend said. "It's the noon rush hour and all this traffic noise and you heard a cricket." "Come on, man." "No, man, I heard a cricket." And focusing more intently, he walked to the corner, crossed the busy avenue, looked around, and finally approached a large shrub in a cement planter, and digging beneath the mulch, found his cricket. And his friend couldn't believe what he had seen. But the friend from the farm said, "My ears are no different than yours. It simply depends on what you've learned to listen for. And here, let me show you." And he reached into his pocket and pulled out a pocket full of change. And he dropped the change on the sidewalk, and at the sound of that money, nearly every head on that block whipped around to see where the money had fallen. "You see what I mean?" the farm boy said as he began picking up what was left of his coins. "It all depends on what you're listening for." And so maybe this morning, wherever we find ourselves, whatever caves we might think we're holed up in, wherever we are on our journey, maybe a part of what we need to remember is that God comes. But sometimes we need to learn a different way of listening, a different way of experiencing, a different way of understanding God's presence. And then maybe no matter where we find ourselves, when God says go, we'll have the courage to go. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. Amen.